Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and today is a Consumer Protection Day. And boy, do we have a lot of talk about relating to scams. There are some dandies out there, as usual. And who better to talk about those scams and how you can avoid them is Michelle Ryan. Michelle is the administrator of the Department of Ag Trade and Consumer Protection's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Larry. Good to see you.
Always good to see you. And of course, we want to hear from you as you listen in. Tell us if you've received any weird or odd phone calls recently. Let us know how you're staying safe on the internet. What's happened that's kind of ruffled your feathers maybe a little bit, or maybe you just have a question about consumer protection. Hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Michelle, is this Cybersecurity Month?
It is, all month long. October is National Cybersecurity Month. You know, that time when we really just need to take the month and think about our digital footprint and our cyber practices to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah, and it seems like it could be really a complicated thing, but is it really complicated?
It can be very complicated. Let's not try and cover that up or sweep it under the rug, but we try to break it down and make it simple. I mean, we want people to be able to be protected from scams, malware, device failure, and all sorts of things that can come with cybersecurity issues, but let's just start simple. We know that the junk drawer can get really cluttered with too many pens and erasers and stickers and everything. Well, so can our cyber world. Our digital space can become very cluttered with out-of-place information and unnecessary data. So this is that month to do some basic cleanup and organize our digital files. And the reason why that's so important is it protects things from getting misplaced and accidentally moved or corrupted or accessed by a scammer or a hacker or something if you end up with malware. So let's not keep more than we need to on our digital devices that can make us vulnerable.
And backup, too. Backup, I think, and then storage. So that's very important as well.
It is. So it's so important that digital files, whether they're work items that you may have, photos, personal documents, think your taxes, receipts, they all need to be backed up. And you can either use external storage devices or cloud storage services. That's going to be your personal preference and what's going to work best for your world and how you navigate your space. And you need to consider all those options. But these files can then be protected should your original device fail or it's compromised by malware. And be sure that it's set up to be regularly backed up. Some kind of routine that you put in place. Is that once a month? Is that when you reach a certain level? Or after every trip, you know, if it's really just photos that you're doing. And sometimes you need to be sure you're backing up the backup because it's all going to depend what system you're using there for that. And you mentioned that careful with that physical storage. Think about the physical storage devices like a USB thumb drive. They're really convenient to share files. Some workplaces ban them and don't let you connect them to their devices. And that's because they can spread viruses and malware. They can also be lost. And so you need to think about what's on that device and where it has come from before you plug it into your own computer. I mean, you don't want to store your taxes on one of those and then have it be on your keychain and now you've lost your keys and someone's got your information because it's unsecure there. So just think through what works best for your system and your data.
What about passwords? I hate having to come up with different passwords. And there's managers that can help you out with that.
There are managers, and I'm sorry that you hate that, but please have different passwords for different things. Please, 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 please is my beg of everyone. Go to the effort of making sure you have different passwords for the different areas, accounts that you access, especially when those accounts are your that passwords, the protection to entering that very sensitive data. Like with your bank account, if you are an online banker, be sure that password's different from the password you use to access your music. I mean, be sure that password for the bank account is very secure, that you're using multi-factor authentication, two things, a house lock and a deadbolt, you know, be sure that it is as secure as possible, and then change and update it. And so that's where those account managers, password managers come into play, because they will help you remember. You could also use the device to help you remember, but then if you don't have that device and you've changed things and need a new one, that may not have transferred, and you run the risk of having to work through getting a new password set up for that. I mean, I've heard of that story before.
What do you think of facial recognition for, like, getting into your bank account or something like that?
I mean, if they have it set up and you feel comfortable with the security and handing over that biometric data to that entity, because they will have it, that's an option for you. I mean, with every benefit, you have to weigh the other side of it. And so, you know, a bank should have high security measures because of what they're protecting already. But do you want to use facial recognition for, say, again, your music? You know, are they going to store and secure your face image, which, you know, is personal data, as and protect it as well as the bank will? You know, certainly I know that major league sports teams are going to quick entry. You know, you can enroll to have quick entry and facial recognition. They recognize you have tickets and in you go. But that entity, they're storing your image now. And are you comfortable with that?
Oh, yeah. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
Yeah. And so, you know, think about that entity and everything that they have in place. And I've had to weigh those balances of, do I want to stand in this line or that line? Is this line that I can get quicker access and entry to worth it to me? And do I trust that entity and know enough about how they store personal data? That doesn't mean there will never be an incident, but what do I know about it, and how long will they keep it, and do I trust it?
Yeah. Michelle Reinen, our guest, and we have a caller online. By the way, if you have a question, you can join in with your consumer scam question at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Got a couple of emails already. And on the phone, we have Charles in Amigo. Hi, Charles.
Hi, hey, Michelle. Hey, Larry. Thanks for talking about this topic. I was wondering if Michelle could kind of go through the first steps to, do when you think that you've been, you know, attacked, whether it's an email on your laptop or if it's a text message or somebody uses your card fraudulently.
Well, those are all maybe three different things you do.
It's a great question, Charles. Thanks for that. I mean, how do I respond to these situations? If I think my device has been attacked, as the word he used, so maybe I have a virus or malware. I mean, one of the first things is to run my antivirus software to see if anything pops up on the computer and the device. Don't respond to pop-ups, because that certainly can be a scam in itself on that device. But go through the process of analyzing the device using the software that you have. Seek out a tech expert in your community, someone you can physically go see and trust and find, you know, talk to friends and family who they've used. Maybe you have someone in your household that has good knowledge and expertise, or maybe at your a church or community center, there is someone there. I mean, if you're an older consumer that doesn't have that kind of experience, there may be that younger someone who this is no problem for them to do. So you want to go through that and then determine what information you've stored on that device. I mean, does that device store your Social Security number? Then you need to be monitoring your credit report to see if there's any activity, if someone has gotten a hold of any information. Is your device automatically logging into your bank account? You need to monitor and notify your bank that someone could have gotten access to that banking information, and what can they do to help you lock down that account, or do you need to change accounts and passwords and PIN numbers? I mean, to what extreme has any access happened? And if you've clicked, you've received a text message that's had a link and you've clicked on that, well, now you need to first see, did I do anything when I clicked that link? Did I hand over any personal information? And if so, what was that information? Or do I just need to check my device to make sure it doesn't have a virus because maybe it loaded a virus or malware on it? And same with a phone call. Did I hand over any information during that call and respond accordingly?
Lots there, Charles. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Dot in Manitowoc has something. Let's go there. Hi, Dot.
Hi, good morning. I don't know if this was a scam or not. I received a letter. The page said Manitowoc Fire Department that I owed $500, but the post office was in Chicago, and I did. I took it to the fire department, but I had to put it in the slot because they were busy doing other things. So I didn't know if that was legitimate or not. What could you tell me about it?
So did you put, what did you put in that slot, Dot? Did you put $500 in there? Or?
Oh, that was just changed. No, I nothing. I didn't know if why, you know, they would select the fire department that I owed $500 and it was a place in Chicago.
Yeah,
I wanted to alert somebody that they did not send the $500.
Okay, I understand. So you were trying to be careful, but also a good citizen, and when you put something in the slot at the fire department.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious as to what the letter said you owed $500 for, but I think you've identified there was certainly a mismatch there. You get a letter from your local fire department. It's coming out of an entirely different state in a major city through a P.O. box is what it sounds like. You did what I would suggest anyone do, verify and confirm information before you make payment. You went down to the fire department to inquire. They were busy, and so you left it behind. If you really owe money, they're going to follow up with you. I mean, there's no question. They'll find it in the slot if you left that letter. But you were trying to verify the information using local and available trusted resources before you took any action. And yeah, why they would be telling you what you owe it for, what you'd owed it for, and it would make sense to you.
Yeah. Dot, you did the right thing. I'm thinking it was a scam. And you did the right thing. Thank you very much for calling in. Appreciate it.
The only other thing I can think of that it could have been, Larry, is professional fundraisers on behalf of a fire department. And so local fire departments and municipalities have their own fundraisers, but sometimes professional fundraisers try and contract with entities to raise on their behalf using their name. And when you look at those professional fundraisers, some money ends up with the municipality, but it's a very small percentage compared to how much goes to payment for that organization doing work. That's not really a scam, but your money isn't going in the amount that you wanted to the fund or to the organization where you want your money to end up with, because yeah. it's such a small percent that ends up there.
I've had that call. It's been years now, but I can remember getting that a time where I was getting two or three over a course of a month. And each time I just say, well, now what percentage of the money goes to the fire department, or the police department was the other one. And they would say, well, they're supposed to tell the truth.
Yes.
And they'd say, well, 15% or something like that.
And they're very aggressive as opposed to your local. And they can't answer questions about any successes they've had during the year or anything they've really done for the community, because they're just, they're working the phone banks, if you think about it. But they are technically doing a job and trying to raise money for an entity.
Michelle Reinen, our guest today, and again, you can join in 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at consumer scams, things that are going on here in Wisconsin and across the nation, but zeroing in on Wisconsin, of course, with Michelle Reinen, Administrator of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Thoughts, questions, comments, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Ethan emailed us this past week. Ethan received a call from someone saying he owed a payment on back taxes, and they could help him. Ethan knows for a fact through the IRS he does not have back taxes, but it was a very convincing voicemail that they left. The voicemail was AI-generated, and it was difficult for him to discern. The only way he knew it was AI was based off the tempo of the voice and the fact that there were no natural breaks in their speech pattern. What's scary is that this voice was creepy good, and the patterns were very difficult to pick up on. What's scarier is that this is the worst this technology will ever be. It's improving daily, and finding ways to combat these scams can be and will be increasingly difficult.
Yeah, Ethan has a wonderful point that artificial intelligence is not just being used for the good design in the good that it can do in different fields and industries. It's being used by these scammers in many different ways, these phone calls attempts. Scammers are going to be able to make far more than ever before, even when they were using robocalls and people could easily identify that. It will get harder and harder. So one example will be the friends and family scam, or what we call grandparent scam, where a voice often was pretending to be that grandchild, but there was something wrong. Oh, broken nose, this, because the voice was just off. Well, now with voice cloning technology, a scammer can take 3 seconds of audio and have an entire conversation in the grandchild's voice if they've lifted it off of social media or anything, and pretend to be that grandchild. And, you know, an older person may have difficulty with hearing. They're not going to recognize things. A conversation in an emergency is not smooth and natural anyway, because people end up being more heightened and hysterical and concerned. So you lose that normal logical thinking in those situations. And that's what that scam's all about, throwing people off balance in order to get money for an emergency. So we are seeing it creep up in romance scams as well, with deep fake photos, deep fake videos. You think you're talking to your boss in some situations because they've taken an AI photo and done generations and videos with it. So there's lots of spaces where we need to be cautious and take time to recognize the red flags of a scam and put important steps and processes in place that we will just stick with no matter what the situation is.
Yeah. I was thinking about that grandparent scam when they call and it's supposedly it's the grandson or granddaughter. One thing you could do is say, well, who's your best friend? Or some other question that the AI wouldn't probably know.
Right. Or just a family password. What is that?
Yeah.
You know, what's the birthday present I gave you when you were six? Your
yeah.
favorite toy when you were seven, whatever that may be.
All good things. Well, we have callers online. We've got some more emails. Let's go to Bill in Eau Claire now. Bill, thank you for calling.
Larry, Michelle, thanks for taking my call. Michelle, my question to you is, did this current administration loosen up phone calls? I've never, ever gotten this many spam calls. I looked at my call log one day. I must have had 10 spam calls. It's just ridiculous.
Okay.
No, we did not loosen anything up. But with technology, scammers are getting more and more aggressive in their phone calls and trying to bombard us with those messages. What you hopefully have seen in the last couple of years is that these calls are now being labeled if you have a smart device and indicate that they're unknown caller, scam likely, because the telecommunication providers are able to authenticate now numbers before they allow them to go through. There's also more task forces in place in order for us to work with or challenge, I guess, and monitor the voice over internet protocol or VoIP phone providers and making sure that they are providing data during investigations and also doing their authentication practices. So the attorney generals across the state, along with the consumer protection agencies, are all working together. And you're probably seeing more and more actions against robocalls. And I think one was just announced here last week or the week before about another robocall action that had been taken.
Bill, thank you. I think Bob, speaking of that, Bob in Stevens Point has a question that might relate to your last comment here. Bob, hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much. Yes, I was wondering if the persons engaged in these scammers and phishing and whatever these illicit things are going on are ever caught and held to account, and what penalties are attached to those activities.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that question is a great lead into the fact that they are, through consumer protection at DADCAP, we are taking actions against telemarketers that we are able to identify that are violating the Wisconsin Do Not Call list. And remember, that's solicitations made to consumers that are on the list. That's not scam calls that you may receive. And so there are penalties that can be awarded or provided against a company, a civil forfeiture. There's a range of penalties, $1 to $100 type situation, which when they're making hundreds of thousands of phone calls really can add up against per phone call that can really add up against a telecommunications provider. And so we have actions that we either take in-house or we may need to refer to Department of Justice or that may go to court. But then again, there are these multi-states, is what they're called, where attorney generals are working together because many of these are calling across the nation. And so they are taking actions along with the Federal Trade Commission, working with our national consumer protection partner against these cases. And we're seeing many announcements in the news coming out as a result of the actions that these task force are taking.
Yeah. Bob, thank you very much. Allison in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Allison.
Hi. I had a question about third-party hotel bookers. I booked a hotel not knowing it was a third party. They said they were the hotel. And when I got to the hotel, they told me that certain deposits had not been made, which I had paid. They told me that that was charged double their room rate. And when I asked for documentation from the hotel, they refused to give it to me. They said they had no obligation to give me any documentation regarding a third-party booker. So I had no recourse anyway because they wouldn't give me any documentation, or not even from my bank. Hmm. And I actually traced that Hampton Inn to the holding company and contacted them, and they refused to deal with me.
Hmm. Well, first, I would start with great legwork that you tried to do in getting all that documentation and making all those requests. The next thing I'd encourage you to do, given the misrepresentations that you are talking about having happened, is to file a complaint with Consumer Protection. So we can help try and get the information. Hopefully, if it was a third-party booking that you did with online, you'll know the website or maybe have some email trail that you can provide. Or at least if you used your credit card, we may be able to get information from the credit card company as to where the charges went and things. But we can kind of sort that out through the mediation process. So you can file on our website at datcp.wi.gov, or you can call the Consumer Protection Hotline at 1-800-422-7128, and we can email or postal mail you a complaint form.
And fill that out, and then so you will be contacting.
We will, yes. We'll be contacting the hotel, and then maybe we can find out the third-party booker, or we can maybe try and track down the third-party booking company and look at what representations they are making, if they're saying they're not really third-party, and try and sort some things out there.
And maybe get your money back.
Get something. I mean, that will be an important part. If you stayed there, there will be a rate issue there, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Allison, I hope that helps. Did you get the information? It's 1-800-422-7128 or DA or online DATCP on .wi.gov. Allison, thank you again. Let's go to Dennis in Two Rivers next. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. Yeah, Michelle, I have a couple of things. One thing for Doc calling from Manitowoc. I have a history where my mom would have trouble and she would fall, and somebody from an ambulance service would come and help her get up off the floor. And since she wasn't transported, they would end up billing her instead of insurance. And that was done out of Milwaukee. So maybe with Manitowoc, they might do something similar out of Chicago. So that's something doctor, somebody else should just figure. If they're financially responsible, like have financial responsibility or a power of attorney, they might get the billing for something like that because somebody wasn't transported, but they were helped.
Yeah, Dennis, that's a really good point. Hopefully that bill will disclose what that $500 charge was for and provide that information so it doesn't look suspicious. And again, since she left it behind, they'll follow again if she truly owes something.
Yeah, Dennis, good point. You had something else?
Yeah, and for TransUnion, I heard that there were some, like 69,000 people whose information was exposed through TransUnion. And TransUnion has my current address, but I haven't gotten anything in the mail. And when I tried the TransUnion website, I don't see anything that shows me my stuff has been compromised, so I'm not sure what to think.
Yeah, the TransUnion data breach was announced publicly, and many were impacted by that, and they did do mailing notifications to those impacted as a result of the breach. And the fact that you didn't get a letter could mean that your data was not impacted as part of the breach. And so it's good that you did follow. But there are still things that everyone can do as a result of this large data breach to remember that it's really important to put a security freeze in place. And I know what I'm saying might be kind of funny because you do that with one of these three major credit reporting agencies, two of which over time now have had breaches.
Yeah.
But you want to lock down your information from anyone else being able to use that data now and take out credit in your name. And so that could be anybody from just someone seeing your Social Security number on a document and trying to be you, or someone selling your information on the black market and trying to go get utilities or get a job using your information. So that's still a really important first step. The other thing to do is monitor your credit report. You can't just put the freeze on and then ignore things. You need to be regularly checking your credit report. Now, you can set that up so you're doing it weekly if you're checking online, because that's now available for free. Maybe you say, that's too much for me, I'm going to check once a month and do the online. Or you can go back to the once a year and rotate through the three credit reporting agencies, and by mail may be your choice. But making sure you have that system in place to be monitoring your information.
Thanks very much for that call. Again, you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. Bob in Superior has a question, and then we'll get to some emails as well. Hi, Bob.
Bob in Superior has a question.
Oh, you need to turn your radio down, Bob.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to. There.
Okay.
I had to get across the room. So we were talking about credit freezes.
Yeah.
And so I did that. Equifax, TransUnion, whatever. I froze my credit. But does that include my wife, or does she have to do it also?
A good question.
That's a great question. Each individual needs to freeze their credit report, and you need to do it with each of the three credit reporting agencies. So really, in a marital situation, that's six freezes. You need Experian, Equifax, TransUnion for Bob there, and then the same three for the wife. You need to be sure that you are doing that. And if you have kids, you can be sure that you are doing that for your children if they are under 16 or under 18. And then once they turn 16, they can do it for themselves. It's free for everyone to do, and it's a really important step.
And it's not difficult.
It's not difficult. It's
just
steps. It's paperwork.
Steps. Yeah.
I mean, you have to prove that you are who you are, you know, that you're not freezing someone else's and having access, because you're going to get a PIN and a password for each one when you need to thaw them, because you're going to go buy that new luxury boat for next summer, you know, and you're going to need that loan. So you need to be able to access and thaw that credit report when you need that extension of credit.
Gwen in Fond du Lac emailed us, is it dangerous to click on unsubscribe, both at the beginning and end of unwanted internet advertising? How can we eliminate these unsolicited emails?
Yeah, that's become a different response over time that I have here. And that is, if it is a company that you have done business with and trust them, and you are done wanting all the advertising, unsubscribe. And get that out of your email, because it's just clogging the filter there. Or change your preferences on how much you're getting. If it's coming to you out of the blue and you don't understand why you're receiving it, and it's unaffiliated with any business that you've done before in the past, just junk those. Set your junk preferences so they just go straight to junk. Versus unsubscribing, because you don't want to click on any links of emails that you can't trust, and you don't know where this is coming from or why it's coming to you.
Okay. Jake in Madison, what's on your mind?
Hello. I took your advice a couple years ago and froze my credit on all three accounts, and I would recommend everybody to go to the Consumer Protection website to get the links. Otherwise, you don't know what you're clicking on if you just Google the different accounts. But my question was, you can't freeze the Experian account for some reason, and I wanted you to get your comments on that, please.
Hmm. That's, should be able to.
Yeah, that's news to me. You should be able to freeze each of the three, and that's Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. We haven't heard from anyone else that you've been unable to freeze with Experian. So that is new information to me and would make me curious as to why you were unable to do that. And I think if yours was, let's just say, rejected, just to pick a term, I'd have you file a complaint with us so we can help assist and find out why they aren't allowing you to freeze that credit report.
Yeah, that's, and again, Jake, you can file a complaint at, or for, to get the complaint information at 1-800-422-7128, 1-800-422-7128, or go to datcp.wi.gov, get the form, and yeah, for anybody else, too.
Yeah, anyone else who wants to get those links. I love that he suggested that that's where we're supposed to be, that safe place where you can go to find that reliable information. And so we do have that all on our website along with phone numbers. And if people can't access that, call the hotline. We'll mail you the fact sheet that has the information on how you can put that security freeze in place.
Jake, thank you very much for calling. Barb emailed us. Cryptocurrency is a very difficult means of finance right now, and vulnerable elderly who see our executive branch making money through crypto without understanding it fully can get scammed. Barb's lonely aging father recently lost over $500,000 by connecting with online with a woman who was portrayed as young. Actually, online women who were portrayed as young, smart, and confident. He had no idea how to navigate researching authenticity and based his decisions on websites that looked real, looked verifiable, looked trustworthy. He had his bank account wiped out, $500,000. How can we inform older adults about the steps to evaluate investments online, especially with newer cryptocurrency models?
Well, Barb, thank you for emailing and sharing that story, because that's one of the first steps to educating others, is sharing that these realities happen and that they aren't just stories that we're telling at Consumer Protection, that real people are being impacted by these scams and the scammers that are out there. We are working really hard with all sorts of organizations, Better Business Bureau, AARP, community organizations, the tri-agency agreements that we have in place, all sorts of complicated words there, the ADRCs in communities, libraries, to be out and educate. We're working with Department of Financial Institutions to create messaging on the warning signs of different scams. But I will say, in your father's situations, one of the things that I was thinking you were explaining could be a bit of a romance scam. And those are some of the hardest to navigate for individuals when they feel connected to another person that they then believe they trust. And the amount of money you're talking about in this scam sounds, and probably the length of time that this scam happened over, is something that has now been termed, not a polite term, pig butchering, because it's set up either in an investment situation or a romance situation where they connect with an individual, a stranger, establish a relationship and say, hey, I have this investment opportunity. And they direct you to these real looking but fake websites that they control that look like investment sites. And they have you invest in cryptocurrency together that they control. And then they keep trying to build your profits and make it look like you're doing very well, and get you to invest more and more and more, and make it very difficult for you to ever get any return out of that. You have to pay all these fees and everything until you're either out of money or someone else finds out and you're kind of cut off from the situation. So this is one of the hardest spaces we are trying to navigate in educating individuals, because once you're caught up in it, it's hard to see a different reality than the person that you're engaged with online and think that you really do trust.
And it's a real sinkhole because cryptocurrency, once it goes into to wherever that is, it is really almost impossible to get it back.
Absolutely. It is very difficult. You know, Barb, depending upon when this would happen, I still suggest filing a complaint with the Department of Financial Institutions, because depending upon who they were connected with, your father, it may match up to some other situations. Too much time may have passed to maybe reverse it for him, but it might help key up and help someone else in any investigations that they are doing, because they investigate investment schemes. And this fits in that category. So you could file with the Department of Financial Institutions.
I was thinking about a story I recently read, actually, that involved the financial person at this city, and he got into this same kind of thing, and essentially drained the bank, the city's. It was millions of dollars, and they did get a little back. I think they got $8 million back. But I mean, it was a terrible, terrible situation, and of course, the person was not supposed to be doing that with the money. But he was looking like he was making all this money for the community, and he was losing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's important for everyone to realize cryptocurrency is unregulated. It is not an official currency, and so there are no federal regulations centered around it. So there's no true structure that everyone's abiding by. And so any returns on investments or profit loss margins that you're hearing about, I mean, this is all just whatever they're telling you, because this isn't something that is currently regulated.
Michelle Reinen, our guest today from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at consumer scams on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Michelle Reinen, administrator of DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Lots of callers, and we got some emails. Let's go to the phones. Sheila in Eau Claire, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I read about something called, and it might have got from one of the credit bureaus. There's something called extended fraud alert. And what's the difference between that and the credit freeze, and which is better to do?
Well, so I haven't heard the word extended in front of it, but a fraud alert notifies you when someone is trying to take out an extension of credit in your name. And so they notify you that there's this transaction pending or happening, and you need to react in order to say, no, that's not me. Someone is using my information, unless it is you. Whereas a security freeze locks it down. No one is able to try a transaction using your information unless they temporarily thaw the information, and you would be the controller of that PIN and password and be working with that financial institution. But a freeze doesn't even allow the attempt to happen, and there's no notification if someone is like pinging on your account to do this, whereas the fraud alert is notification, but you need to then respond. So a lot of credit card companies have also set up fraud alerts. So if there's activity on your card, you can either track every transaction, or if there's an unusual transaction, they will alert you and question if that's you, and you need to respond to that, sometimes for the transaction to even go through when it is you.
Yeah, I had a credit card, my credit card company called and said, yeah, did you really buy that necklace and are sending it to Colorado? And I said, nope. And they said, that's what I thought. So there you go, Sheila. Thank you for calling. Bonnie in Peterson, Minnesota, your turn.
Hello. Well, I've had two scams. One was the one that you talked about earlier, where somebody called pretending to be my son and had been in a car accident and needed money. And, you know, he sounded a little funny, but supposedly had a cold and had the lawyer call me and a fake officer call me. It was a very involved. But then when I started asking about where's your office and what's your phone number, and click. So, and the other scam is that every now and then I get a call from Medicare and they ask for your Medicare number saying, oh, we're going to send you a new Medicaid card that has so many more benefits and so on. And of course, they just want to get your number. So got to be careful.
Yeah, good points.
Well, excellent point on the Medicare, because we're coming into open enrollment season. And
yes.
So we're not going to... We're going to see all sorts of activity as it relates to enrollment, but that will also then create all sorts of other confusion. And this summer, the Bonnie explained one of the situations of your new card. They were trying to say there's new cards that are plastic. You know, give us, confirm, we'll replace your paper card with this new plastic card situation. So any variation they can put on that scam, they will. Keep that number to yourself. You turn it over when you need medical care, and no one else who calls you out of the blue needs to receive that number ever. If they are making the call to you, you don't need to give it to them.
Bonnie, thank you very much for calling. And Donna in Washburn, it's your turn. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I recently, about a month ago, purchased an HP printer, a new printer, and I did it through the, they have an all-in-one service where you get your ink free and so forth. And with that comes an online support. So I was having a little trouble with getting my printer to work, and I went to the online support. And long story short, I ended up being redirected to somebody who actually got onto my computer. I assumed this was the official HP support, and they actually were able to get into my computer and said they were fixing a whole bunch of things, that they found a bunch of things that were bad. And then after about an hour, this took a long time, and after about an hour, they talked about the service they were providing for $549, this fix that they had. And I was kind of taken aback. It was like, I asked, do I have to purchase this? And they never directly said yes. But they had access to my credit card information, because on the HP site, I signed up for this with my credit card information. So anyway, it ended up, it was a scam, and it was a company called Business Express, and I saw that there were other people reporting this, but anyway, I felt so foolish that I authorized this, but it was all happening so fast, and I thought I was talking with HP.
Well, I tell you what, that is a sad thing, and we'll take some time to ponder it, because we're at the top of the hour. Donna, so you can either hang on or hang up, and when we come back from our break, Michelle Reinen's going to have some comments for sure that will be helpful. Michelle Reinen is administrator of DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and she's going to be with us when we get back after this look at the news and finding out what else is in store for us here on WPR News. I'm Larry Mueller. taking a look at consumer scams on the show today with Michelle Reinen of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protections, Consumer Issues Division, I should say. Good grief. She's the administrator of DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And when we broke for news, we had Donna from Washburn on, and Donna had been involved in a printer scam. You know the background. Could you comment?
Yeah. I mean, this one's pretty complicated because she bought a new printer and bought this service and package and wanted to then use that service but got redirected. So it sounds more complicated than just your traditional pop-up scam that we're going to find a tech support scam on a computer. And in this case, because there was a credit card on file and there is a company name, I'd actually encourage Donna to file a complaint about this to see if there is something for us to trace and maybe there's some money to get back there with this situation. But you know, the traditional tech support scam for everyone is that someone sees a pop-up on their computer that is asking them to respond, and then you connect and give access, and then they try and sell you a service, but because they've had access, they can also get at your information. With Donna's situation, she bought a device, was trying to hook it up, had some trouble, but with that device bought a service package, called the number, got redirected, and then they had a lot of access to her computer and tried to do a further sale. So that's more of a scheme than just a flat-out scam, if you will, and that's why I want her to be sure she files a complaint. And I also hope that she runs any antivirus software or does a mental evaluation of what do I store on my computer and what could they have gotten access to, and then monitor those things to be sure there isn't any suspicious activity if she had a social security number or bank account connections on the device since they had so much remote time.
Donna, again, thank you for calling with that information. Appreciate it very much. Let's turn to Liz in Madison next. Hi, Liz.
Hi. So I have two questions. One of them is sort of fraud. Well, it's a question about should we be cautious about investing with, like, a reputable bank institution? Should we think that there might be something that we could get scammed in that instance?
If you go directly to the bank, you mean, and talk to the...
Yeah.
If you're dealing directly with your financial institution or a financial advisor that has all the appropriate accreditations and you've checked them out, you can have more confidence there. You're always going to want to keep your documentation, understand your investment as best we are able to when we're investing with others, but monitor and track that. And always be giving the money to the entity and never to a person. That's where we have seen some disreputable advisors say, I have this investment over here, write the check to me. But you need to write it to the company and the entity that they work for, because that's who you're investing with on that behalf. And always do your double check and verification about that company and how long they've stood and their ratios and returns and everything, and feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, Liz, that makes sense. I want to go back, too, to Donna and Washburn. It had been a while since we had given the information on who to contact at the department to get the form that she needs to fill out.
Yeah, great point, Larry. Thank you. You can call the Consumer Protection Hotline at 1-800-422-7128, or you can go online at DATCP.wi.gov.
All right. There we go. And Liz, thank you for calling. And of course, anybody else who thinks they should be filing a report, please use that information that Michelle just gave us. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call 800-642-1234 Or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Bob in Sun Prairie, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. This is interesting because this is one of the notes on my desk of tasks I need to accomplish. But I got something last month from, I believe it was AAA, and they said that if I wanted to sign up with them, and it was a free service included in my AAA membership, that they would keep track of my monitoring my credit cards and so on. And I'm wondering if that's a good idea, or am I now giving my information all to yet another agency that may or may not be responsible with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the balance test there, Bob. That's a wonderful question and one that I want everyone to ask themselves when they are considering that. It's important that we monitor our information, and you can hire a service to do that. You want to hire one that you are comfortable with. So you want to check them out. You want to understand how much information you need to give them, how they are going to secure and store that data and use it. And then when you're done with them, how do they destroy or delete and get rid of that information? And if you're comfortable with their privacy policies and their reputation or track record, then okay. But know that most of the monitoring that they're going to do, you want the list to fully understand, you can do yourself for free. However, if your lifestyle doesn't allow you to do that on any good regular basis, then this might be something that you do have to farm out to a service in order to be comfortable. So it's that balance test of what do I say I'm going to do versus what I'm really going to do in monitoring? And that's kind of what Cybersecurity Awareness Month is about, putting in place those practices that you can keep going, like going to the gym on a regular basis, monitoring your information.
Bob, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Mickey in Rice Lake. Hi, Mickey.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I appreciate your programming. Hi, Michelle. I've got some doozies for you.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. I hope so. Okay, here we go. I filed my income tax on the IRS.gov website. The post had been secure, and I do this all the time. Well, when I filed my income tax, I got all the way to the end, I put all of my information in and went to hit submit, and it wouldn't submit. Well, needless to say, I was hacked.
Oh.
They had a phone number in which to call, because I did research, and this number just kept popping up as one to call. So I called the number to see why my information had not been submitted for my income tax return. Well, it was a scam. I got hacked.
So this is something that's gone on a little bit with IRS and paying taxes. There's different ways that it gets done, Michelle.
Yeah, it sounds like at first maybe the fake website in order to do the filing, and then it wouldn't go. So a phone number that was associated with it. So it can be difficult to be sure you're at the correct location when submitting information. And so we try to validate, remembering government ends in .govs, but it could very easily misorder
.com,
a .org, or just rearrange those letters, making it difficult to identify and see. Hackers and scammers, I mean, they can buy their way to the top of the list and make their information appear first on a return when you are just searching online in your web browser. So we need to be sure that we're looking all the way down through all the information and not just taking that first return of information as the proper source. And I heard Mickey say, you know, I kept seeing this phone number. It popped up. So she felt that that was the legitimate phone number for her to call. For taxes, a great resource is your local library. They're going to have good contact information for you. A post office may have some information for you as well, but your local library is going to be a great resource for that. There's also usually in communities centers that can help with filing, so they'll have contact information. If you can get some paper forms as well, if you're older, an ADRC may have information available to you. And I think 211, you know, they're always going to have contact information for you to assist. So hopefully Mickey has reached out to the IRS and gotten those taxes filed legitimately. But now, because information has probably been obtained by the scammer, putting a PIN in place, that personally identifiable number that you'll need to use every time you file your taxes so they know they are truly coming from you. You can do that both with the Department of Revenue here in Wisconsin and the IRS. And now those are your taxes, and that PIN will be needed in order to file them every time.
Yeah. Mickey, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. David in Madison, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Larry. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm just calling to tell you of a scam that they tried on me, but luckily I didn't fall for it, and I hope other people don't either. I called, and a person identified themselves as a Dane County Sheriff, and that please explain why I missed a court date. And I said, what court date? He said, well, you were served with a signature required notice to come to jury duty, and you didn't show up. And I said, well, I didn't sign for any letter like that. And he said, well, we have your signature right here. They knew my full name, my address, everything. Then they said that the judge had issued two tickets, one for $2,700 and another one for $2,700, and they needed the money today, otherwise I'd be detained for 72 hours in jail. And I needed to stay on the phone and go to a financial institution to get the money and bring it to a kiosk.
Oh, boy.
They said if I hang up the phone, deputies will be on the way to my house. So I said my battery on my phone is going to die. I'm very sorry. And I hung up. And then they called back, and two deputies are on the way. And I reported it to Dane County Sheriff, and even when you call the number back, they answer the phone pretending they're Dane County Sheriff deputies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you got out of it, David.
Yeah, because I, you know, they said don't hang up. I hung up. It didn't. Something yeah. sounded very funny, but it was very convincing at first because it's certainly possible that something. And what they wanted me to do was to show up with that money, and they wanted to do a signature analysis to see if the signature they had on the letter from the post office matched my signature. And if it didn't match, they would return the $5,400.
Oh.
Well, I love this story for a few reasons. One, because he got away from it and didn't give the $5,400. So great job, David, there. I love the story because it shows how elaborate these scams are getting and every twist and turn that they're using in order to try and really control us to hand over the money and trick us in doing that. I mean, fear tactics, because it's law enforcement. You're going to be detained. Secrecy, because don't hang up. They want to stay connected so you can't talk to anyone else. You can't do any verification because you'll be on your smart device. So how are you going to verify the information? They follow it through in answering the phone number so they look real. They're calling something a government kiosk as well. And we've seen many new twists and turns to the jury duty scam come through and have heard from a number of different consumers. It starts with that call or text message claiming to come from local law enforcement. Now they're being sent a link to a website with an official sounding URL and a page design, and you're asked to give your birth date and social security number to find out how much you owe. And then in some cases, it has claimed that you owe thousands of dollars in unpaid fines for failing to appear. So now the scammer has your personal information. They take it to that next step where they're trying to get you to send them money, usually by a credit card or through cash. But they also asked you to transmit money through your financial institution and handing over that information, or go to a government kiosk, which doesn't exist. They're sending you to a cryptocurrency ATM and having you put money into their wallet rather than their own. And that is incredibly difficult to recover. So for everyone, this is not how jury duty works. You get a letter. You're told that you need to serve. It will tell you where and when to report or what phone number to call to see if you need to report. If you need a pass, if you will, because you can't make it, there's a process for that. And if you've missed jury duty, there's a process for that as well. It doesn't go straight to fines and jail time, but you check with your local clerk of courts, because every municipality, every county has a little bit different process, but they're the officials that know how it works. So, be cautious of these jury duty scams, because they are circulating hot and heavy right now.
Yeah. David, thank you very much for calling. Philomena in DeSoto will go to you. Hi, Philomena.
Hi there, Larry, and thanks for this kind of opportunity. I had a situation about 6 months ago where I got an email that looked perfectly legitimate from my attorney. I had had some legal work done the previous year and had nothing pending with her, but this message came through. And when I looked at the email address, it indeed was her email address. What it turned out to be is someone had spoofed her email. So it wanted me to download a document that she was providing to me. And the download was never successful. So I replied to the email saying it didn't work. They responded back saying, go ahead, try it again. We've solved that problem. Again, it failed. And then I thought, you know, this is kind of unusual that she's sending me a document now once we've concluded our business. So I called the attorney's office, and they explained that, yes, indeed, her email address had been spoofed. And it may have looked like it was coming from her, but it was not. So I was lucky in that nothing actually happened to me. I, as a caution, changed my passwords on my bank account, my email account, and various other sensitive accounts. And I didn't suffer any problems from it. But it's one of those situations where, you know, you think you're being smart by even checking the email address and then find out that it was spoofed. So there is a way, I understand, I've learned this since then, that there is a way that you can check in the message header for where the actual email address is that's sending the message, but it's not something that's typical. So my son gave me a good recommendation and said, what he does is if he ever gets something that comes to him that's unexpected like that, he, instead of replying to the message, always just contacts the institution that's reaching out directly through him reaching out to them as opposed to responding to something that he gets. That way he protects himself from possibilities like this.
Yeah. Those good points, Philomena, and you're agreeing, Michelle.
Yeah, Philomena's got it. Changed the passwords and on different accounts when she discovered her issue. Her son's information, contact the institution directly to verify. The other thing I've seen different organizations do when they realize that they've been spoofed or their information taken over, that they send an email to their contact list that says, I've recently had my account do not respond or open any links and attachments, you know, so everyone knows. So I've seen that communication as a good practice as well.
And thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or your email to talk@WPR.org. Let's go to Cindy in La Crosse. Hi, Cindy. Cindy, are you there? Maybe we lost Cindy. Well, call back. If you had a drop call there, feel free to do that. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. A listener called, couldn't stay with us. They say that people should not carry around their Social Security card in their wallet.
Absolutely right. Great tip. Clean out the wallet. Unless you're going to your first day on the job and you need to fill out all the tax forms and everything, you don't need that Social Security card to travel with you. Lock it up. Keep it someplace safe.
I think Colleen emailed us. How would you access information of a deceased spouse? Is there information needed? Any information needed other than the death certificate? That might be out of our range.
I'm not sure what information about a spouse they're trying to access or why. If you're trying to, you know, shut down email accounts and different things related to a passing of someone, then yes, death certificate is often what you're going to need there, or to show as well that you're the new person in charge of the estate, usually will also be needed.
Yeah. Bruce emailed us, loves the show, recently visited his 94-year-old father in Arizona, is doing well, but having some trouble identifying which email is spam. Any general recommendations you could provide?
Ooh, email that's spam. That's a tough one. You know, it's going to be, you want to just, that one's really hard because, you know, who do you do business with? And so that's who you're going to get confirmation emails from, and usually ads if you've forgotten to check the box that says, don't send me advertisements. And then friends and family, that's going to be regular email, and everything else is just junk and spam. So
I go to preferences and you can select out anything other than those, can't you?
I think so. Yeah. Each device has a method for doing that, and the different Outlook, the different email platforms as well on a computer device. So
In this case, Bruce could, if he could take a look at the computer that the father has, or identify it, then he can go online. I mean, if he's not there now in Arizona, he could go online to the whichever computer system it is and learn how to eliminate junk emails.
Right. And if they, that being a family relationship, maybe the password and username is shared, and he can go in and set those for him remote from a different location well. I know I have done that with family members as well.
All right. Rick and Monona, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I was just thinking how disappointing it is that we have to be so wary whenever we go on the internet now that there are people out there that are willing to take advantage of us and steal our money. And at any rate, the slickest one scam I've seen so far was when I was driving through Illinois and Indiana. I have an iPass in my car, which automatically reads whatever the toll is and pays it. So while we were driving through, I got a text message that said that we owed all this money for driving through Illinois and Indiana. And my wife said she actually keeps money in the account because they require it. And so she knew it was a scam, but how did they know I was driving through Illinois and Indiana at the time? How did they zoom in on that? It was really unbelievable.
I think that's lucky timing right there. Wisconsin was hit really hard in the spring and over the summer by the fake toll scam. We were many, many, many spikes and peaks, and the Department of Transportation started to put the different images of the different scams on their website because many looked like they were coming from the DOT. And it's because we live on a border, and we're a border state to where there are tolls, and we do travel by vehicle through those tolls, and we don't always know how they work because we're not doing it every day. So not everyone does, and they felt we were going to be easy targets for that, those scammers did. So I think that was just plain old lucky timing because, as you know, having an iPass, you don't pay by text message and having your phone number out there. It's through that little reader card that you have.
Michelle Ryan, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Spending the 2 hours today talking with Michelle Ryan about consumer scams and lots of activity here. And you can join in 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. Cindy in La Crosse, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and Michelle.
Hi.
I have seen numerous commercials on television for somehow some protection service to protect the title on your farm or your home because people might hack into your title and establish lines of credit with using your property. And obviously they want you to purchase some sort of monitoring service. Have either one of you seen that?
I have seen those commercials as well.
I haven't seen those.
and I think, you know, on the program we've talked a few times about some of the scams surrounding titles and people trying to steal your title from you through real estate scams. That scam and title lock, I think, service that they're trying to provide is something that works a little differently in Wisconsin. So while it can happen, it is harder to make that scam work in our state. And it starts with identity theft. So if you are keeping your information secure and locking that down, you are in a much better place, but you can always just check with the municipality, you know, on your title. But we haven't seen where that title lock is necessary in our state because of the process that exists in transfer of property.
Cindy, thank you very much for calling. Margaret in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I was contacted, but I contacted my bank because there was a huge charge that I didn't make. And when I called, they transferred me to the fraud department. And a couple of days later, I got a call from Wells Fargo Bank saying that, asking if I was going to open a charge account. And I said, no. So they said, let me transfer you to the fraud department. So they transferred me to the fraud department, and they said that there was something on my account that I needed to speak with the Treasury Department. Well, it went on from there, and they said that I had three something against me for laundering money to Mexico.
Oh, boy.
And that they could help me get those frauds taken off my account if I would work with them. So I took the number, and I called back, and I got the right answer, you know, of the Treasury Department. And I took the men's number and everything like that. And it went on from there to the, I don't know, some other department going on and on and on. And they said that they were conducting a trap over the United States for these people. And if I helped them, they would take, they would help me get these relief, these charges against me released. Well, at that time, I was waiting for a result from a cancer test. And I really was not thinking at all. And I went through everything. I called, they said, well, you're going to have to call the Treasury Department. I called the Treasury Department. And they always answered the right way. You know, Detective so-and-so or something. Well, I ended up giving them my entire savings.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I just wanted other people to know that because it looks like it's coming on the phone from an institution, it doesn't necessarily mean it really is the institution.
Yeah. Oh, Margaret, I'm so sorry. Michelle, I'm you're nodding in agreement
yeah.
with me.
Well, I feel terrible, Margaret, in that these scammers always try and take advantage of us in a good circumstance. And when you're dealing with other
issues
in life, it really makes things even harder to navigate. I hope that you have filed a complaint with either your local law enforcement or reported it to Consumer Protection. In as much information as you have and phone numbers that you dialed, I don't want to put any false hope out there, but if there's something to track and trace with this scam, certainly that will be done. And you would have a lot of potential information there to follow, given the amount of interactions you've had. Your example is one to, I'm really appreciative that you're willing to share it with everyone else
yeah.
so they can learn and have that prevention. These scammers will go to any length to try and impersonate financial institutions, the federal government, the state government, any storyline that will help navigate you to handing money over to them. And you've set it up. We call these kind of scams that continue snowball effects because they just keep rolling downhill and getting bigger and bigger. So I do hope that if you haven't yet reported it to law enforcement or to Consumer Protection, that you will do that so we can see if there's any help that can be provided. And because it's been a while, the website that you can go to is datcp.wi.gov, or the hotline at Consumer Protection at DACAP is 1-800-422-7128.
800-1-800-422-7128.
Yeah. The other thing is, hopefully you've been in contact with your financial institution as well in person to report all this, since they were the ones being impersonated. And I don't know if they have a fraud department that's also looking at these things, but that would be another avenue to go to if money was transferred and things. Maybe there's some assistance through that department as well.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, and I'm really sorry for your loss. We'll take some other calls, and Marcia in Verona has something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, thanks for taking this call. I have had my credit frozen, you know, in the three different, you know, Equifax, and there's two of them, two other ones, for quite some time now. Do I still feel like I should get something like you know, LifeLock, something, you know, in addition to just the credit freezes?
Yeah, so the security freezes lock down your credit report with those three credit reporting agencies. And, you know, a security freeze, a credit freeze, That's the same thing. It's interchanged language that I'm using here today. They're called both things, really. But LifeLock is a product. There are many out there that will monitor your digital footprint online, your credit report, whatever else they're promoting and advertising to you. Maybe bank files and activities, maybe with other entities, your driver's license record. And there's many things that they can offer you, probably based on the service package that you purchase from them. And again, there's many companies, but these are all things that you can monitor yourself if you have the time and patience. And I would say you're diligent about making sure that you are doing that monitoring and not just leaving it to once a year. Or you can hire a service, but always hire a service that you're comfortable with. You know their privacy policy. You know the monitoring that they will be doing for what cost. And if they say that they have any recovery, how you apply for that. If you become impacted by a data breach, how does that recovery apply so you're comfortable with what you're paying for and that they will secure your data? Because you're handing it over to someone else and whatever their system is for securing it.
Yeah. Marcia, thank you very much for calling in. And Frank in Springbrook, we'll go to you. Hi.
Yeah. My issue is the subscriptions that you get tagged with when you go online, like you use a service.
Yeah.
I use this service a few years ago where you like you ask an expert for a question, like you wanted to talk to someone who's an expert in plumbing or you're trying to fix your car. And it happened twice where when you sign up for a one-time fee, but then they have a writer there that automatically is going to bill you every month. And if you're not paying attention to your bank account, you get all these fees. But one thing I've noticed is that there are companies that will charge a subscription, but they'll send you an invoice and a receipt every month, so you know you're getting charged. Like my telephone company does that. I have an AI company that does transcriptions that does that. Some others, but there's others and that don't send you an invoice, don't send you a receipt when you paid. And I believe a few years ago, like the Washington Post got in trouble because of this. And I think even Google Prime got in trouble for this. So my question is, why don't these companies, why aren't they required to send you an invoice? And then when you paid, show that you paid. I mean, that would do away with a lot of these problems of subscriptions. And I don't see why they don't do it.
Yeah,
it's a great question. There is no legislation or statute in Wisconsin that requires that billing. But if you don't authorize the billing, then there is legislation. It's a statute that we enforce, unauthorized billing. So it's when you are signing up for that either free trial and you have to give the credit card number or the one-time service, reading all those details to make sure you're clicking the box or unclicking the box and knowing exactly what you're agreeing to and what those cancellation policies are. So if you are trying to cancel something that you have been signed up for and they aren't allowing you to cancel or they didn't fully disclose the information, that's an area to file a complaint so we can follow up with those services and apps and things, because they need your full authorization and your consent in order to continue to charge that card every month.
Frank, thank you very much for calling. Michelle Reinen, our guest today, as we talk consumer protection issues. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll tell you which flowers help monarchs in their journey south. And Brian Huddleston will talk about the most common plant diseases he diagnosed in 2025. That's tomorrow. Right now, we're talking consumer protection with Michelle Reinen of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection here for Wisconsin. And we'll go to Georgia in Madison next. Georgia, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. I keep getting emails almost every day and usually more than one from some some person who represents themselves as a recruiter who's impressed with my resume. I don't have a resume. I have a full-time job caring for my disabled partner, so I'm a caregiver. And I always, I never, you know, click. I just click on the report junk and delete. But they just, how do I make them stop coming? Is this a scam that I'm just not biting on, or is it just annoying?
Oh, it's a scam.
It is a scam that you are not biting on, and I am glad to hear you are not. The junk and delete are the right method. You won't be able to, or you don't want to respond because you'll engage. And this is a scam trying to get that personal information from individuals. And in some cases, the job scam goes further to getting money because they'll magically hire you for some company that doesn't exist and ask you to buy equipment and everything for the job. And now they're getting your money because they're sending you to a place where no equipment will show up, but it's their store, if you will. But that's after they've gotten all your information from the hiring process and things. So you keep reporting them and keep deleting them, but just don't engage. And the only way to make them to stop is if you can set up any kind of filter on your email system so they just go straight to junk using a rule.
Mm-hmm. Georgia, thank you. Bob in Sun Prairie is back. Bob, hi.
Hey, Larry. I had part two to my question earlier when I asked about letting AAA keep track of my credit cards and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So my understanding was that probably not a good idea, but rather just do it through Equifax and TransUnion and so on. And another question I have is, I'm at a point in my life where I no longer have a mortgage, hip hip hooray, and I would like to freeze the title to my home as well, and I don't really know how to go about that. Do you need to contact an attorney to do that, or is it something you can do on your own?
I don't know the specific process to doing that, so I think consulting with an attorney does sound like a good idea. You could always Google the answer, but it may just tell you the steps, but I wouldn't use the offerings in the answer type situation, but maybe you'd be aware of some steps in the process. But again, Wisconsin is somewhat unique in the transfer of a title as it relates to scams and frauds. So you're going to want to consult with an attorney there.
Yeah, I think that's money well invested, Bob. Lois in Boulder Junction, your turn. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I wanted to tell you about a scam that I got involved in with last summer. They texted me from PayPal and said that someone had been using my account and to call this 800 number, which I did. Well, I soon realized it was a scam. So I went in, got my husband's phone, called my credit card company, and during this time, I was taking screenshots of everything that they sent me so I could look at it to follow it up. And we were on the phone with them for 2 hours.
Oh.
And I put my phone right down next to my husband's phone, and the credit card company was able to listen in. They had charged $3,400 twice on my PayPal account for Bitcoin. So we weren't charged for it. But if people have this happening, make screenshots of what they're sending you, because they sent me their link and their phone numbers, and then they wanted me to go to the local ATM, which they knew in our town where it was located, and get out $200 and send it to them.
Yeah.
To clean it up. But I wasn't charged anything, and I didn't follow through. But I did call the credit card company and let them listen in while we were talking, and I made screenshots that I sent to them.
Wow.
Well, I would say that was brave in that we really encourage consumers to disconnect and disengage as quickly as possible. You took a different path to get the credit card company involved and have them listen and be a receptor of all that information because they have that fraud department. So there was guidance there, and sometimes law enforcement will also do that. But if you're alone and independent and not having that other official with you, screenshots are keeping documentation always good, but please don't stay on the line to see how a scam's going to navigate just to collect that information. I'd rather consumers disengage so they can't be taken advantage of.
Yeah. I remember a call from somebody who was giving a hard time back to the scammer and hung up, but then the police showed up at his house because the scammer called the police department and said there was a ruckus or something going on at that particular house.
I remember that call well. They were swatted, and it was very scary for that consumer at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Greg emailed us, most of our major assets are held in trust. Greg's. Does Greg need to protect the trust or themselves as individuals, Greg and his wife?
Well, he'll definitely want to continue to protect themselves as individuals because it's still their credit it's their credit report that gets them extensions of credit that's used if they should ever need that, or for employment or utilities and others taking advantage to any potential debt. So they want to lock that down so no one can use their identities for that. You'll also want to find ways with your attorney or your financial institutions to be sure your trust is as protected as it can be. It won't have its own credit report associated with it, but you want to make sure that all aspects of that trust are secure as well.
We have Ross from Bayfield emailed us. He's been receiving multiple calls a day from a 650 area code. I know that code because I get it all the time, too. The last four numbers are different each call. AT&T is telling him that these are spam calls, so don't answer and don't leave voice messages. Any merit to answering?
No. If you don't recognize the number, and don't answer it. If it's something important, they're going to leave you a voicemail and you can call back. But I wouldn't engage with numbers you don't recognize, and it's best just to stay disconnected, unplugged.
Okay. And I'm looking through. We have so many things that we haven't covered, and we've only got about a minute to go. One thing, just on landlords, there was an unfortunate story there about a tenant's experience with a fake landlord. And maybe in this last minute, you can cover that.
Yeah, this is a situation where the landlord wasn't really the landlord the tenant thought they were. It is someone who rented, if you will, a property for a month, you know, a vacation property, and then presented themselves as a landlord and tried to then rent out this property that they were using. So the tenants applied, got the rental, were living there. There was a problem with the property, and it became uninhabitable. It was so severe, it became uninhabitable. The apartment ceiling actually collapsed.
Oh.
No one was injured, but the tenant tried to contact the landlord who they'd been paying rent to, you know, and paid a security deposit to. Well, once the property was deemed uninhabitable, they wanted to get their security deposit back, find a new place to live, and report the issue. Well, that's when they discovered they didn't really own the property. This wasn't really a landlord, and this was all just a scam. So it's really important if you are looking for property out there that you run those internet searches for the landlord's name and property address. You investigate those results. You make sure that individual really owns the property or is the management company for the property. So you're not left high and dry. In this case, they at least had a place for a month to live. In many of these situations, there's never even a unit there for anyone to live in.
Michelle, a big pleasure. Thanks so much for spending the 2 hours with us. Michelle Reinen, administrator of DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. She'll be back. Thanks to Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, Clara Neipert, and Joel Patnon of our team, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in stir here on WPR News.